Pyotr Alexandrovich walked in. I took a furtive glance at him. He looked as though nothing had passed between us, that is, he was gloomy and austere as usual. But from his pale face and the faintly twitching corners of his mouth, I guessed that he could hardly conceal his perturbation. He greeted Alexandra Mihalovna coldly and sat down in his place without a word. His hand trembled as he took his cup of tea. I expected an explosion, and I was overcome by an exaggerated terror. I should have liked to retreat, but could not bring myself to leave Alexandra Mihalovna. At the sight of her husband, she, too, had a foreboding of trouble. At last, what I was expecting with such terror happened. In the midst of a profound silence, I raised my eyes and met Pyotr Alexandrovich's spectacles turned straight upon me. This was so unexpected that I started, almost cried out, and dropped my eyes. Alexandra Mihalovna noticed my perturbation.
"What's the matter with you? What are you blushing at?"
I heard Pyotr Alexandrovich's harsh voice. I was silent. My heart was thumping so that I could not answer a word.
"What is she blushing at? Why is she always blushing?"
he asked, addressing Alexandra Mihalovna and rudely pointing towards me. I could hardly breathe for indignation. I flung an imploring glance at Alexandra Mihalovna. She understood me. Her pale cheeks flushed. "Annetta," she said to me in a firm voice, such as I should never have expected from her, "go to your own room. I'll come to you in a minute. We will spend the evening together."
"I asked you a question. Did you hear me or not?"
Pyotr Alexandrovich interrupted, raising his voice still higher, and seeming not to hear what his wife had said.
"Why do you blush when you meet me? Answer!"
"Because you make her blush, and me too,"
answered Alexandra Mihalovna in a breaking voice. I looked with surprise at Alexandra Mihalovna. The heat of her retort was quite incomprehensible to me for the first moment.
"I make you blush? I?"
answered Pyotr Alexandrovich, emphasizing the word I and apparently roused to fury, too.
"You have blushed for me? Do you mean to tell me I can make you blush for me? It's for you to blush, not for me, don't you think?"
This phrase, uttered with such callous, biting sarcasm, was so intelligible to me that I gave a cry of horror and rushed to Alexandra Mihalovna. Surprise, pain, reproach, and horror were all depicted on her face, which began to turn deathly pale. Clasping my hands with a look of entreaty, I glanced at Pyotr Alexandrovich. It seemed as though he himself thought he had gone too far. But the fury that had wrung that phrase out of him had not passed. Noticing my mute prayer, he was confused, however. My gesture betrayed clearly that I knew a great deal of what had hitherto been a secret between them, and that I quite understood his words.
"Annetta, go to your room,"
Alexandra Mihalovna repeated in a weak but firm voice, getting up from her chair.
"I want to speak to Pyotr Alexandrovich."
She was calm on the surface, but that calm made me more frightened than any excitement would have done. I behaved as though I did not hear what she said, and remained stock still. I strained every nerve to read in her face what was passing in her soul at that instant. It seemed to me that she had understood neither my gesture nor my exclamation.
"See what you have done, miss,"
said Pyotr Alexandrovich, taking my hand and pointing to his wife.
My God, I have never seen such despair as I read now on that crushed, deathly-looking face.
He took me by the hand and led me out of the room. I took one last look at them. Alexandra Mihalovna was standing with her elbows on the mantelpiece, holding her head tight in both hands. Her whole attitude was expressive of unbearable torture. I seized Pyotr Alexandrovich's hand and squeezed it warmly.
"For God's sake, for God's sake," I brought out in a breaking voice. "Spare her."
"Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid,"
he said, looking at me strangely.
"It's nothing, it's nerves. Go along, go along."
Going into my room, I threw myself on the sofa and hid my face in my hands. For 3 whole hours I remained in that attitude, and I passed through a perfect hell during those hours. At last I could bear it no longer, and sent to inquire whether I could go to Alexandra Mihalovna. Madame Leotard came with an answer.
Pyotr Alexandrovich sent to say that the attack was over, that there was no need for anxiety, but that Alexandra Mihailovna must have rest. I did not go to bed till 3 o'clock in the morning, but walked up and down the room thinking. My position was more perplexing than ever, but I somehow felt calmer, perhaps because I felt myself more to blame than anyone. I went to bed looking forward impatiently to the next day. But next day, to my grievous surprise, I found an unaccountable coldness in Alexandra Mihailovna. At first I fancied that it was painful to her pure and noble heart to be with me after the scene of the day before with her husband, of which I had been the involuntary witness. I knew that the childlike creature was capable of blushing at the sight of me and begging my forgiveness for the unlucky scenes having wounded me the day before. But I soon noticed in her another anxiety and an annoyance, which showed itself very awkwardly. At one time she would answer me coldly and dryly. Then a peculiar significance could be detected in her words. Then she would suddenly become very tender with me, as though repenting the harshness which she could not feel in her heart. And there was a note of reproach in her affectionate and gentle words. At last I asked her directly what was the matter, and whether she had anything to say to me. She was a little taken aback at my rapid question, but at once, raising her large, clear eyes and looking at me with a tender smile, she said, "It's nothing, Netochka. Only do you know, when you asked me so quickly, I was rather taken aback. That was because you asked me so quickly, I assure you. But listen, tell me the truth, my child. Have you got anything on your mind which would have made you as confused if you had been asked about it so quickly and unexpectedly?" "No," I answered, looking at her with clear eyes. "Well, that is good to hear. If you only knew, my dear, how grateful I am to you for that good answer. Not that I could suspect you of anything bad. Never. I could not forgive myself the thought of such a thing. But listen, I took you as a child, and now you are 17. You see for yourself, I am ill. I am like a child myself. I have to be looked after. I cannot fully take the place of a mother to you, although there was more than enough love in my heart for that. If I am troubled by anxiety now, it is, of course, not your fault, but mine. Forgive me for the question, and for my having perhaps involuntarily failed in keeping the promises I made to you and my father when I took you into my house. This worries me very much, and has often worried me, my dear." I embraced her and shed tears. "Oh, I thank you. I thank you for everything," I said, bathing her hands with my tears. "Don't talk to me like that. Don't break my heart. You have been more than a mother to me. Yes, may God bless you and the prince for all you have both done for a poor, desolate child." "Hush, Netochka, hush. Hug me instead. That's right. Hold me tight. Do you know, I believe, I don't know why, that it is the last time you will embrace me." "No, no," I said, sobbing like a child. "No, that cannot be. You will be happy. You have many days before you. Believe me, we shall be happy." "Thank you. Thank you for loving me so much. I have not many friends about me now. They have all abandoned me."
"Who have abandoned you? Who are they?"
"There used to be other people round me. You don't know, Netochka. They have all left me. They have all faded away as though they were ghosts, and I have been waiting for them all my life. God be with them. Look, Netochka, you see it is late autumn. Oh, soon the snow will be here. With the first snow I shall die, but I do not regret it. Farewell." Her face was pale and thin. An ominous patch of red glowed on each cheek. Her lips quivered and were parched by fever. She went up to the piano and struck a few chords. At that instant a string snapped with a clang and died away in a long, jarring sound. "Do you hear, Netochka? Do you hear?" she said all at once, in a sort of inspired voice, pointing to the piano. "That string was strained too much, to the breaking point. It could bear no more and has perished. Do you hear how plaintively the sound is dying away?
She spoke with difficulty. Mute spiritual pain was reflected in her face, her eyes filled with tears.
Come, Nyetochka, enough of that, my dear. Fetch the children.
I brought them in. She seemed to find repose as she looked at them, and sent them away an hour later.
You will not forsake them when I am dead, Nyetochka, will you?
She said in a whisper, as though afraid someone might overhear us.
Hush! You are killing me!
Was all I could say to her in answer. I was joking, she said with a smile after a brief pause. And you believed me. You know I talk all sorts of nonsense sometimes. I am like a child now. You must forgive me everything. Then she looked at me timidly, as though afraid to say something. I waited.
Mind you don't alarm him,
she said at last, dropping her eyes with a faint flush in her cheeks, and in so low a voice that I could hardly catch her words.
Whom?
I asked with surprise.
My husband. You might perhaps tell him what I have said.
What for? What for? I repeated, more and more surprised.
Well, perhaps you wouldn't tell him. How can I say?
She answered, trying to glance shyly at me, though the same simple-hearted smile was shining on her lips, and the colour was mounting more and more into her face.
Enough of that. I am still joking, you know.
My heart ached more and more.
Only you will love them when I am dead, won't you?
She added gravely, and again, as it seemed, with a mysterious air.
You will love them as if they were your own, won't you? Remember, I always looked on you as my own, and made no difference between you and the children.
Yes, yes,
I answered, not knowing what I was saying, and breathless with tears and confusion. A hot kiss scalded my hand before I had time to snatch it away. I was tongue-tied with amazement. What is the matter with her? What is she thinking? What happened between them yesterday? Was the thought that floated through my mind. A minute later she began to complain of being tired.
I have been ill a long time, but I did not want to frighten you two. You both love me, don't you? Goodbye for now, Nyetochka. Leave me, but be sure to come in the evening. You will, won't you?
I promised to, but I was glad to get away. I could not have borne any more.
Poor darling! Poor darling! What suspicion are you taking with you to the grave?
I exclaimed to myself, sobbing.
What new trouble is poisoning and gnawing your heart, though you scarcely dare to breathe a word of it? My God! This long-suffering which I understand now through and through, this life without a ray of sunshine, this timid love that asks for nothing, and even now, almost on her deathbed, when her heart is torn in two with pain, she is afraid, like a criminal, to utter the faintest murmur, the slightest complaint, and imagining, inventing a new sorrow, she has already submitted to it, is already resigned to it.
Towards the evening in the twilight, I took advantage of the absence of Ovrov, the man who had come from Moscow, to go into the library and, unlocking a bookcase, began rummaging among the bookshelves to choose something to read aloud to Alexandra Mihailovna. I wanted to distract her mind from gloomy thoughts, and to choose something gay and light. I was a long time absent-mindedly choosing. It got darker, and my depression grew with the darkness. I found in my hands the same book again, with the page turned down on which even now I saw the imprint of the letter, which had never left my bosom since that day, the secret with which my existence seemed, as it were, to have been broken and to have begun anew, and with which so much that was cold, unknowing, mysterious, forbidding, and now so ominously menacing in the distance, had come upon me.
What will happen to me?
I wondered. The corner in which I had been so snug and comfortable would be empty.
the pure, clean spirit which had guarded my youth, would leave me. What was before me? I was standing in a reverie over my past, now so dear to my heart, as it were striving to gaze into the future, into the unknown that menaced me. I recall that minute as though I were living it again. It cut so sharply into my memory. I was holding the letter and the open book in my hands. My face was wet with tears. All at once I started with dismay. I heard the sound of a familiar voice. At the same time I felt that the letter was torn out of my hands. I shrieked and looked round. Pyotr Alexandrovich was standing before me. He seized me by the arm and held me firmly. With his right hand he raised the letter to the light and tried to decipher the first lines. I cried out and would have faced death rather than leave the letter in his hands. From his triumphant smile I saw that he had succeeded in making out the first lines. I lost my head. A moment later I had dashed at him, hardly knowing what I was doing, and snatched the letter from him. All this happened so quickly that I had not time to realize how I had got the letter again. But seeing that he meant to snatch it out of my hand again, I made haste to thrust it into my bosom and step back 3 or 4 paces. For half a minute we stared at each other in silence. I was still trembling with terror, pale. With quivering lips that turned blue with rage, he broke the silence.
"That's enough," he said in a voice weak with excitement. "You surely don't wish me to use force. Give me back the letter of your own accord."
Only now I realized what had happened, and I was breathless with resentment, shame, and indignation at this coarse brutality. Hot tears rolled down my burning cheeks. I was shaking all over with excitement, and was for some time incapable of uttering a word.
"Did you hear?"
he said, advancing 2 paces towards me.
"Leave me alone! Leave me alone!"
I cried, moving away from him.
"Your behaviour is low, ungentlemanly. You are forgetting yourself. Let me go!"
"What? What's the meaning of this? And you dare to take up that tone to me after what you've... Give it to me, I tell you!"
He took another step towards me, but glancing at me saw such determination in my eyes that he stopped, as though hesitating.
"Very good,"
he said dryly at last, as though he had reached a decision, though he could still scarcely control himself.
"That will do later, but first—"
Here he looked round him.
"You. Who let you into the library? How is it that this bookcase is open? Where did you get the key?"
"I am not going to answer you," I said. "I can't talk to you. Let me go, let me go."
I went towards the door.
"Excuse me," he said, holding me by the arm. "You are not going away like that."
I tore my arm away from him without a word, and again made a movement towards the door.
"Very well. But I really cannot allow you to receive letters from your lovers in my house."
I cried out with horror, and looked at him frantically.
"And so—"
"Stop!" I cried. "How can you? How could you say it to me? My God! My God!"
"What? What? Are you threatening me, too?"
But as I gazed at him, I was pale and overwhelmed with despair. The scene between us had reached a degree of exasperation I could not understand. My eyes besought him not to prolong it. I was ready to forgive the outrage if only he would stop. He looked at me intently and visibly hesitated.
"Don't drive me to extremes," I whispered in horror.
"No, I must get to the bottom of it,"
he said at last, as though considering.
"I must confess, the look in your eyes almost made me hesitate,"
he added with a strange smile.
"But unluckily the fact speaks for itself. I succeeded in reading the first words of your letter. It's a love letter. You won't persuade me it isn't. No, dismiss that idea from your mind. And that I could doubt it for a moment only proves that I must add to your excellent qualities your abilities as an expert liar. And therefore, I repeat—"
As he talked, his face was more and more distorted with anger. He turned white, his lips were drawn and twitching so that he could hardly articulate the last words. It was getting dark. I stood defenseless, alone, facing a man who was capable of insulting a woman.
All appearances were against me, too. I was tortured with shame, distracted, and could not understand this man's fury. Beside myself with terror, I rushed out of the room without answering him, and only came to myself as I stood on the threshold of Alexandra Mihailovna's study. At that instant I heard his footsteps. I was just about to go in when I stopped short, as though thunderstruck.
"What will happen to her?"
was the thought that flashed through my mind.
"That letter! No, better anything in the world than that last blow to her."
And I was rushing back. But it was too late. He was standing beside me.
"Let us go where you like, only not here, not here," I whispered, clutching at his arm. "Spare her. I will go back to the library, or where you like. You will kill her."
"It is you who are killing her," he said, pushing me away.
Every hope vanished. I felt that to bring the whole scene before Alexandra Mihailovna was just what he wanted.
"For God's sake," I said, doing my utmost to hold him back.
But at that instant the curtain was raised, and Alexandra Mihailovna stood facing us. She looked at us in surprise. Her face was paler than usual. She could hardly stand on her feet. It was evident that it had cost her a great effort to get as far as us when she heard our voices.
"Who is here? What are you talking about here?"
she asked, looking at us in the utmost amazement. There was a silence that lasted several moments, and she turned as white as a sheet. I flew to her, held her tight in my arms, and drew her back into her room. Pyotr Alexandrovich walked in after me. I hid my face on her bosom and clasped her more and more tightly in my arms, half dead with suspense.
"What is it, Nyetochka? What's happened to you both?"
Alexandra Mihailovna asked a second time.
"Ask her. You defended her so warmly yesterday," said Pyotr Alexandrovich, sinking heavily into an armchair.
I held her more tightly in my embrace.
"But my goodness, what is the meaning of it?" said Alexandra Mihailovna in great alarm. "You are so irritated, and she is frightened and crying. Annetta, tell me all that has happened."
"No, allow me first," said
Pyotr Alexandrovich, coming up to us, taking me by the arm and pulling me away from Alexandra Mihailovna.
"Stand here,"
he said, putting me in the middle of the room.
"I wish to judge you before her who has been a mother to you. And don't worry yourself, sit down," he added, motioning Alexandra Mihailovna to an easy chair. "It grieves me that I cannot spare you this unpleasant scene, but it must be so."
"Good heavens! What is coming?"
said Alexandra Mihailovna, in great distress, gazing alternately at me and her husband. I wrung my hands, feeling that the fatal moment was at hand. I expected no mercy from him now.
"In short," Pyotr Alexandrovich went on, "I want you to judge between us. You always, and I can't understand why, it is one of your whims, you always, yesterday, for instance, thought and said, but I don't know how to say it. I blush at the suggestion. In short, you defended her. You attacked me. You charged me with undue severity. You even hinted at another feeling, suggesting that that provoked me to undue severity. You... but I do not understand why. I cannot help my confusion, and the colour that flushes my face at the thought of your suppositions. And so I cannot speak of them directly, openly before her. In fact, you—"
"Oh, you won't do that! No, you won't say that!"
cried Alexandra Mihailovna in great agitation, hot with shame.
"No, spare her! It was all my fault. It was my idea. I have no suspicions now. Forgive me for them. Forgive me. I am ill. You must forgive me. Only do not speak of it to her. Don't! Annetta," she said, coming up to me. "Annetta, go out of the room. Make haste, make haste. He was joking. It is all my fault. It is a tactless joke."
"In short, you were jealous of her on my account," said Pyotr Alexandrovich, ruthlessly flinging those words in the face of her agonized suspense.
She gave a shriek, turned pale, and leaned against her chair for support, hardly able to stand on her feet.
"God forgive you," she said at last in a faint voice. "Forgive me for him, Nyetochka. Forgive me. It was all my fault. I was ill.
But this is tyrannical, shameless, vile!
I cried in a frenzy, understanding it all at last, understanding why he wanted to discredit me in his wife's eyes.
It's below contempt! You, Annetta!
Cried Alexandra Mihalovna, clutching my hands in horror.
It's a farce and nothing else, said Pyotr Alexandrovich,
coming up to us in indescribable excitement.
It's a farce, I tell you,
he went on, looking intently with a malignant smile at his wife.
And the only one deceived by the farce is you. Believe me, we,
he brought out breathlessly, pointing at me,
are not at all afraid of discussing such matters. Believe me that we are not so maidenly as to be offended, to blush and to cover our ears when we are talked to about such subjects. You must excuse me. I express myself plainly, simply, coarsely, perhaps, but it is necessary. Are you so sure, madam, of this young person's correctness of behaviour?
My God, what is the matter with you? You are forgetting yourself,
said Alexandra Mihalovna, numb and half dead with horror.
Not so loud, please,
Pyotr Alexandrovich interrupted her contemptuously.
I don't like it.
This is a simple matter, plain, vulgar in the extreme. I am asking you about her behaviour. Do you know? But I did not let him finish, and seizing him by the arm, I forcibly drew him away. Another minute, and everything might have been lost.
Don't speak of the letter,
I said quickly in a whisper.
You will kill her on the spot. Censure of me will be censure of her, too. She cannot judge me, for I know all. Do you understand? I know all.
He looked at me intently with wild curiosity, was confused. The blood rushed to his face.
I know all, all,
I repeated. He was still hesitating. A question was trembling on his lips. I forestalled him.
This is what happened,
I said aloud, hurriedly, addressing Alexandra Mihalovna, who was looking at us with timid and anxious amazement.
It was all my fault. I have been deceiving you for the last 4 years. I carried off the key of the library, and have for 4 years been secretly reading the books in it. Pyotr Alexandrovich caught me reading a book which could not, should not have been in my hands. In his anxiety over me, he has exaggerated the danger. But I do not justify myself, I added quickly, noticing a sarcastic smile on his lips. It is all my fault. The temptation was too great for me, and, having once done wrong, I was ashamed to confess what I had done. That's all, almost all that has passed between us.
Oh, how smart,
Pyotr Alexandrovich whispered beside me. Alexandra Mihalovna listened to me intently, but there was an unmistakable shade of mistrustfulness on her face. She kept looking first at me, then at her husband. A silence followed. I could hardly breathe. She let her head fall on her bosom and hid her face in her hands, considering and evidently weighing every word I had uttered. At last she raised her head and looked at me intently.
Nietochka, my child, she said, I know you cannot lie. Was this everything that happened? Absolutely all?
Yes, all, I answered.
Was that all?
She asked, addressing her husband.
Yes,
he answered with an effort.
All. I heaved a sigh.
On your word of honour, Nietochka?
Yes,
I answered without faltering. But I could not refrain from glancing at Pyotr Alexandrovich. He laughed as he heard my answer. I flushed hotly, and my confusion did not escape poor Alexandra Mihalovna. There was a look of overwhelming, agonizing misery in her face.
That's enough, she said mournfully. I believe you. I cannot but believe you.
I think such a confession is sufficient, said Pyotr Alexandrovich. You have heard. What would you have me think?
Alexandra Mihalovna made no answer. The scene became more and more unbearable.
I will look through all the books tomorrow,
Pyotr Alexandrovich went on.
I don't know what else there was there, but...
But what book was she reading?
Asked Alexandra Mihailovna.
What book? Answer, he said, addressing me. You can explain things better than I can,
he said with a hidden irony. I was confused and could not say a word. Alexandra Mihailovna blushed and dropped her eyes. A long pause followed. Pyotr Alexandrovich walked up and down the room in vexation.
I don't know what has passed between you, Alexandra Mihailovna began at last, timidly articulating each word. But if that was all...
She went on, trying to put a special significance into her voice, though she was embarrassed by her husband's fixed stare, and trying not to look at him.
If that was all, I don't know what we all have to be so unhappy and despairing about. I am most to blame. I alone, and it troubles me very much. I have neglected her education, and I ought to answer for it all. She must forgive me, and I cannot and dare not blame her. But, again, what is there to be so desperate about? The danger is over. Look at her, she went on, speaking with more and more feeling, and casting a searching glance at her husband. Look at her! Has her indiscretion left any trace on her? Do you suppose I don't know her, my child, my darling daughter? Don't I know that her heart is pure and noble, that in that pretty little head... she went on, drawing me towards her and fondling me. There is clear, candid intelligence, and a conscience that fears deceit. Enough of this, my dear. Let us drop it. Surely something else is underlying our distress. Perhaps it was only a passing shadow of antagonism. But we will drive it away by love, by good will, and let us put away our perplexities. Perhaps there is a good deal that has not been spoken out between us, and I blame myself most... I was first reserved with you. I was the first to be suspicious. Goodness knows of what, and my sick brain is to blame for it. But since we have been open to some extent, you must both forgive me, because indeed there was no great sin in what I suspected.
As she said this, she glanced shyly with a flush on her cheek at her husband, and anxiously awaited his words. As he heard her, a sarcastic smile came onto his lips. He left off walking about and stopped directly facing her, with his hands behind his back. He seemed to be scrutinizing her confusion, watched it, reveled in it. Feeling his eyes fixed upon her, she was overwhelmed with confusion. He waited a moment as though he expected something more. At last he cut short the uncomfortable scene by a soft, prolonged, malignant laugh.
I am sorry for you, poor woman, he said at last, gravely and bitterly, leaving off smiling. You have taken up an attitude which you cannot keep up.
What did you want? You wanted to incite me to answer, to rouse me by fresh suspicions, or rather by the old suspicion which you have failed to conceal in your words. The implication of your words, that there is no need to be angry with her, that she is good even after reading immoral books, the morality of which, I am saying what I think, seems already to have borne fruits, that you will answer for her yourself. Wasn't that it? Well, in explaining that, you hint at something else. You imagine that my suspiciousness and my persecution arise from some other feeling. You even hinted to me yesterday, please do not stop me. I like to speak straight out. You even hinted yesterday that in some people, I remember that you observed that such people were most frequently steady, severe, straightforward, clever, strong, and God knows what other qualities you did not bestow on them in your generosity. That in some people, I repeat, love, and God knows why you imagined such a thing, cannot show itself except harshly, hotly, sternly, often in the form of suspicions and persecutions. I don't quite remember whether that was just what you said yesterday. Please don't stop me. I know your protege well. She can hear all, I repeat for the 100th time, all. You are deceived. But I do not know why it pleases you to insist on my being just such a man. God knows why you want to dress me up like a tomfool. It is out of the question, at my age, to be in love with this young girl. Moreover, let me tell you, madam, I know my duty. And however generously you may excuse me, I shall say, as before, that crime will always remain crime, that sin will always be sin, shameful, abominable, dishonourable, to whatever height of grandeur you raise the vicious feeling. But enough, enough, and let me hear no more of these abominations.
Alexandra Mihalovna was crying.
Well, let me endure this. Let this be for me, she said at last, sobbing and embracing me. My suspicions may have been shameful. You may jeer so harshly at them. But you, my poor child, why are you condemned to hear such insults? And I cannot defend you. I am speechless. My God, I cannot be silent, sir. I cannot endure it. Your behaviour is insane. Hush, hush, I whispered, trying to calm her excitement, afraid that her cruel reproaches would put him out of patience. I was still trembling with fear for her.
But, blind woman, he shouted, you do not know, you do not see.
He stopped for a moment.
Away from her,
he said, addressing me and tearing my hand out of the hands of Alexandra Mihalovna.
I will not allow you to touch my wife. You pollute her. You insult her by your presence. But what forces me to be silent when it is necessary, when it is essential to speak? He shouted, stamping. And I will speak. I will tell you everything. I don't know what you know, madam, and with what you tried to threaten me, and I don't care to know. Listen, he went on, addressing Alexandra Mihalovna. Listen.
Be silent, I cried, darting forward. Hold your tongue, not a word.
Listen.
Hold your tongue in the name of...
In the name of what, madam?
He interrupted with a rapid and piercing glance into my eyes.
In the name of what? Let me tell you, I pulled out of her hands a letter from a lover. So that's what's going on in our house. That's what's going on at your side. That's what you have not noticed, not seen.
I could hardly stand. Alexandra Mihalovna turned white as death.
It cannot be, she whispered in a voice hardly audible.
I have seen the letter, madam. It has been in my hands. I have read the first lines, and I am not mistaken. The letter was from a lover. She snatched it out of my hands. It is in her possession now. It is clear. It is so. There is no doubt of it. And if you still doubt it, look at her and then try and hope for a shadow of doubt.
Nietochka! Cried Alexandra Mihalovna, rushing at me. But no, don't speak, don't speak. I don't understand what it was, how it was. My God, my God!
And she sobbed, hiding her face in her hands.
But no, it cannot be, she cried again. You are mistaken. I know what it means, she said, looking intently at her husband. You are not deceiving me, Nietochka. You cannot deceive me. Tell me all without reserve. Has he made a mistake? Yes, he has made a mistake, hasn't he? He has seen something else. He was blind. Yes, wasn't he? Why did you not tell me all about it, Nietochka? My child, my own child.
Answer. Make haste. I heard Pyotr Alexandrovich's voice above my head. Answer. Did I or did I not see the letter in your hand?
Yes, I answered, breathless with emotion.
Is that letter from your lover?
Yes, I answered.
With whom you are now carrying on an intrigue?
Yes, yes, yes,
I said, hardly knowing what I was doing by now, and answering yes to every question simply to put an end to our agony.
You hear her? Well, what do you say now? Believe me, your kind, too confiding heart, he added, taking his wife's hand. Believe me and distrust all that your sick imagination has created. You see now what this young person is. I only wanted to show how impossible your suspicions were. I noticed all this long ago, and am glad that at last I have unmasked her before you. It was disagreeable to me to see her beside you, in your arms, at the same table with us, in my house, in fact. I was revolted by your blindness. That was the reason, and the only reason, that I observed her, watched her. My attention attracted your notice, and starting from God knows what suspicion, God only knows what you have deduced from it. But now the position is clear. Every doubt is at an end. And tomorrow, madam, tomorrow, you will leave my house. He concluded, addressing me.
Stop! Cried Alexandra Mihalovna, getting up from her chair. I don't believe in all this scene. Don't look at me so dreadfully. Don't laugh at me. I want to judge you now. Annetta, my child, come to me. Give me your hand, so. We are all sinners, she said in a voice that quivered with tears, and she looked meekly at her husband. And which of us can refuse anyone's hand? Give me your hand, Annetta, my dear child. I am no worthier, no better than you. You cannot injure me by your presence, for I too am a sinner.
"Madam!" yelled Pyotr Alexandrovich in amazement. "Madam, restrain yourself! Do not forget yourself!"
"I am not forgetting anything. Do not interrupt me, but let me have my say. You saw a letter in her hand. You even read it, you say, and she has admitted that this letter is from the man she loves. But does that show that she is a criminal? Does that justify your treating her like this, insulting her like this before your wife?" "Yes, sir, before your wife. Have you gone into this affair? Do you know how it has happened?"
"The only thing is for me to run and beg her pardon. Is that what you want?" cried Pyotr Alexandrovich. "It puts me out of all patience listening to you. Think what you are talking about. Do you know what you are talking about? Do you know what and whom you are defending? Why, I see through it all."
"And you don't see the very first thing because anger and pride prevent your seeing. You don't see what I am defending and what I mean. I am not defending vice. But have you considered, and you will see clearly if you do consider, have you considered that perhaps she is as innocent as a child? Yes, I am not defending vice. I will make haste and explain myself if that will be pleasant to you. Yes, if she had been a wife, a mother, and had forgotten her duties, oh, then I would have agreed with you. You see, I have made a reservation. Notice that, and don't reproach me. But what if she has received this letter thinking no harm? What if, in her inexperience, she has been carried away by her feelings and had no one to hold her back? If I am more to blame than anyone because I did not watch over her heart? If this letter is the first, if you have insulted her fragrant maidenly feelings with your coarse suspicions, what if you have sullied her imagination with your cynical talk about the letter? If you did not see the chaste maidenly shame which was shining on her face, pure as innocence, which I see now, which I saw when distracted, harassed, not knowing what to say and torn with anguish, she answered yes to all your inhuman questions. Yes, 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 it is inhuman, it is cruel. I don't know you. I shall never forgive you this, never. Yes, have mercy on me, have mercy on me, I cried, holding her in my arms. Spare me, trust me, do not repulse me. I fell on my knees before her. What if I had not been beside her? She went on breathlessly. And if you had frightened her with your words, and if the poor child had been herself persuaded that she was guilty, if you had confounded her conscience and soul and shattered the peace of her heart, my God! You mean to turn her out of the house? But do you know who are treated like that? You know that if you turn her out of the house, you are turning us out together, both of us. Do you hear me, sir? Her eyes flashed, her bosom heaved. Her feverish excitement reached a climax.
"Yes, I've heard enough, madam," Pyotr Alexandrovich shouted at last. "Enough of this! I know that there are platonic passions, and to my sorrow I know it, madam. Do you hear? To my sorrow. But I cannot put up with gilded vice, madam. I do not understand it. Away with tawdry trappings. And if you feel guilty, If you are conscious of some wrongdoing on your part, it is not for me to remind you of it, madam. If you, in fact, like the idea of leaving my house, there is nothing left for me to say but that you made a mistake in not carrying out your design when it was the fitting moment. If you have forgotten how many years ago, I will help you.
I glanced at Alexandra Mihailovna. She was leaning on me and clutching convulsively at me, helpless with inward agony, half closing her eyes in intense misery. Another minute, and she would have been ready to drop.
Oh, for God's sake, if only this once, spare her! Don't say the last word!
I cried, flinging myself on my knees before Pyotr Alexandrovich and forgetting that I was betraying myself. But it was too late. A faint scream greeted my words, and the poor woman fell senseless on the floor.
"It is all over! You have killed her!" I said. "Call the servants! Save her! I will wait for you in your study. I must speak to you. I will tell you all."
"But what? But what?"
"Afterwards!"
The fainting and hysterics lasted 2 hours. The whole household was alarmed. The doctor shook his head dubiously. 2 hours later, I went into Pyotr Alexandrovich's study. He had only just come back from his wife and was walking up and down the room, pale and distracted, biting his nails till they bled. I had never seen him in such a state.
"What do you want to say to me?"
he said in a harsh, coarse voice.
"You wanted to say something."
"Here is the letter you found in my possession. Do you recognize it?"
"Yes."
"Take it."
He took the letter and raised it to the light. I watched him attentively. A few minutes later, he turned quickly to the fourth page and read the signature. I saw the blood rush to his head.
"What's this?"
he asked me, petrified with amazement. "It's 3 years ago that I found that letter in a book. I guessed that it was forgotten. I read it and learned everything. From that time forth, it has been in my possession because I had no one to whom to give it. I could not give it to her. Could I to you?
But you must have known the contents of this letter and all the sorrowful story in it. What you're pretending is for, I don't know. That is for the present dark to me. I cannot yet see clearly into your dark soul. You wanted to keep up your superiority over her, and have done so. But for what object? To triumph over a phantom, over a sick woman's unhinged imagination, to prove to her that she has erred, and you are more sinless than she? And you have attained your aim, for this suspicion of hers is the fixed idea of a failing brain, perhaps the last plaint of a heart broken against the injustice of men's verdict, with which you were at one. What does it matter if you have fallen in love with her? That is what she said. That is what she wanted to show you. Your vanity, your jealous egoism have been merciless. Goodbye. No need to explain. But mind, I know you. I see through you. Don't forget that."
I went to my own room, scarcely knowing what was happening to me. At the door, I was stopped by Ovrov, Pyotr Alexandrovich's secretary.
"I should like to have a word with you," he said with a respectful bow.
I looked at him, scarcely understanding what he said to me.
"Afterwards, excuse me, I am not well," I answered at last, passing him.
"Tomorrow, then,"
he said, bowing with an ambiguous smile. But perhaps that was my fancy. All this seemed to flit before my eyes. The End of the Fragment, Left Unfinished by Dostoevsky.